Welcome back to Jokerman Podcast. Today, it's been too long. Today, podcast about Mr. Warren Zevon. I'm Ian.
I'm Evan.
And we are thrilled to be joined for the first time by canonical expert Zevon Knower, I think. But I guess we'll find out soon enough. You know him from online, as well as his position at the New York Times. It's Willie Staley. Willie, thank you so much for joining.
Thanks for having me on. I should just jump in here and correct the record really quickly. Not that heavy on the lore, which I thought I warned you about on the...
We were aware, but we're just trying to make you sound good to the audience.
All right, good. I want to prepare the audience for what they're about to hear, actually.
Yes, well, what you're about to hear, what everyone out there is about to hear, is a conversation about a record that has been a long time coming here on this program. We've hit Sentimental Hygiene, we've hit Mutineer, everyone's favorite Warren Zevon records, but we have left one uncovered up until now. That's right. It's time to take a trip down to Transverse City.
It's funny to me that you're like, oh, well, I guess we don't have the biggest Warren Zevon knower, as if that would help anybody in this situation. I mean, it's just like, it's not like anybody who was the biggest Warren Zevon fan in the world was prepared for Transverse City. I don't know that there's much scholarship about the record.
There really is not, based on the Googling that I've been doing.
So nobody's an expert on this particular album. It's just what I'm trying to say.
We're all going to become experts together.
Arguably, Warren Zevon also not necessarily an expert on this record.
Well, yeah, it seems like, I mean, in a way, one of the interesting things about the album is that it seems like he kind of gave up on the idea like halfway through.
Halfway through, exactly.
Yeah.
Literally halfway through.
Well, yeah. Yes and no. I mean, it's debatable whether it's a giving up or if it's just full immersion.
Or if it atomizes into other themes, and yeah, maybe.
That's maybe true. Maybe Transverse City is a little closer to home than any of us might realize. What's your history with Warren, Willie?
It's recent. I mean, so you're talking to in terms of what I am an expert on is a certain 6 year period of Bay Area rap music. So I that's what I grew up listening to, and that's really where my comfort zone is. I really started listening to Zevon heavily. And it's funny. I mean, I lived the first two albums plus Sentimental Hygiene. I mean, whatever, self-titled. I guess that's actually the second.
Yeah, for all intents and purposes, the first.
And then of course, Excitable Boy, and Sentimental Hygiene, and I've listened to those a lot. But my explorations around the catalog, other than that, have been pretty limited, actually. So this was an exciting opportunity for me to dive into, you know, the most bizarre record in the whole catalog.
Yes.
But my history is deep on a couple records, really, really obsessively listened to those in recent years. My kid really likes Zevon, so that's been a real treat.
Your kid likes, how old's your kid?
He's three. He just turned three.
Three? He's three, so, and you've got him listening to Zevon.
obviously just, I wouldn't say he came to this himself, but he got really into, Rolling the Headless Thompson Gunner.
Oh, that's a great one.
Last summer, we were in the car. It was pretty funny, actually. He was wanting us to play a song. He kept requesting it, and he was saying Sabana, Sabana. And we were we had no idea what he was talking about. And we were like, you're talking about Nirvana? Do they play this in school? We had no idea. We were trying to figure it out. And then I was shuffling through songs and went past something on it. I think the first chords of Roland played, and he was Sabana, this is days later. And I realized it was Roland the Headless Thompson Gunner in his era. And
Sabana, I love it.
He was really into it, and he's listening to it a lot. So he really, that's fun. You know, it kind of it's weirdly, before they really know bad words or whatever, it's all pretty kid friendly.
It's a story song. One has a
beloved characters.
It has characters, it has a tale being told. In the distant or much more distant past than, I don't know, people, fairy tales used to be morbid and dark, you know.
Yeah, modern day Grimm's fairy tale rolling headless Thompson Gunner.
Yeah, I mean, the original Pinocchio was a lot more disturbing, and all those German Grimm's fairy tales. Yeah, so the one about the CIA and the headless guy. It is like a modern Collodi style tale. That's who wrote Pinocchio, right?
I don't know.
You're gonna have to be the one. You're the Pinocchio knower of the of the program here.
Yeah, Hans Christian Zevon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, the I think that's a pretty, you know, like standard way into Zevon. Mm. And honestly, that was my, you know, way in also. Like the first two records and Sentimental Hygiene, like those are the great. Those are kind of the great records, because as soon as you hit Bad Luck Streak and Dancing School, which is a fun record, it's got some bangers on it, no question, but it doesn't really kind of do it for you the same way that the first couple did. But then at a certain point, you know, at least if you start doing a stupid podcast like this, you just got to really knuckle down and get down to the deep, dark depths of the shit, which brings us to Transverse City. I guess how would we describe this? It's a 1989 record, right? So it's the sequel to, or not sequel, but the follow-up to Sentimental Hygiene, which was his comeback record. And right. That was a pretty successful record, I think. You know, he had the REM guys around and, you know, kind of came back into the spotlight and was on the upswing after a couple years in the wilderness. And this is how he decided to spend his cultural capital at the moment in time, a concept album about a hellhole urban environment at some indeterminate point in the future, or is it, that turns into this weird kind of art rock statement on the way we live, or we lived in 1989, I guess. I don't know. It's got a very strong, you know, Bush, you know, H.W. Bush kind of flavor to it to me.
Yeah. I guess when you say spend his cultural capital, I suppose that also translates to just spend a major label's money.
Spend actual capital. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, on like a thing that he couldn't have done otherwise, at least not to his exacting standards. And this is not something that helped.
He got dropped from Virgin after this, right? That was that story. So he comeback record, Sobriety. Then he spends all their money and drops this like absolute dud.
Complete disaster. Yeah. Total just Hindenburg fucking of a record.
Yeah. I will say just right off the bat though, I'll go to bat for this record. Now, having spent like the last couple of weeks with it, I like probably half of it a lot, actually.
Hell yeah.
It really grew on me. There's a couple songs that are great. And then there's some that are, I think pretty rough. It's like Deltron 3030 by Zevon or whatever. Like, reminds me of like, or like Dr. Octagon. We're like, we're in a weird, you know, I honestly haven't even encountered concept records by the type of rock and roll dude he is ever.
Yeah, it doesn't really happen very often that I guess the closest thing that we have talked about on this program is something that we just talked about, which is I'm a Curiad by Donald Fagen, his one half of Steely Dan's concept album about driving around a steam-powered car in the future. And that's like the rich man's version of this. This is the version of like a guy who's maybe not doing so hot and living in the San Fernando Valley in the bad part of town in the dystopic future. Mm. And Donald, meanwhile, is maybe zooming around on the East Coast in his car in the good side of the world.
Yes, yeah, it's the same. It's taking place in the same universe, Transverse City and Kamakiriad. It's just Warren Zevon is the like lumpen proletariat version, and Donald Fagen is like the PMC, like, you know, living the high life type of fella.
Yeah, or he's, for example, the one who lives in San Francisco, and then there's one who lives in Los Angeles.
I feel like this is the perfect troika here, because we're coming to everyone out there from the three transverse cities of America right now: Los Angeles, mm-hmm. San Francisco, and New York, each of which is just a, you know, an unlivable kind of hellhole with fluorocarbons in the ozone layer, so to speak.
According to some, you know.
According to some. I was wondering though, I was thinking about it a little bit and like, because we did talk about Kamakuria last time and now we're talking about Transverse City this time, like these like rich, I don't know if that's the right word, rich, you know, imaginative.
Ambitious.
Yeah, there you go. Concept records, like about the future, whether it's good or bad or somewhere in between or something. Like, I feel like this is so totally just out of fucking fashion entirely. Like, does anyone make any records that are like these big kind of concept thematically cohesive, whether or not this record actually is entirely thematically cohesive? I feel like this is just like something that has completely been consigned to the fucking dustbin of history at this point.
That seems right. I mean, but also no one really makes like records with any idea about what they're doing. You know, I mean, they're not like rap albums are not like released in the same way anymore. I don't know, like nothing's even remotely like this. The idea of Virgin splashing out and having like Jerry Garcia on guitars and for your concept record about the future. It feels extremely dated. It seems like it also, like, even the idea of like, it seemed like he had read like Future Shock or something. You know what I mean? He was really, totally. I mean, we can actually get into what he actually did read. Cause I, there's like the second, the first line of the second track. I don't know if this is, if I'm jumping ahead here, but, he's talking about, like, I was walking in the ruined city. I was thinking about entropy. And I was like, oh, that sounds like a guy who just read a Thomas Pynchon novel or something. Like, just like vaguely like, yeah, entropy, that's an interesting idea. And then if you read around about it, that is actually the case. He was reading Thomas Gibson and Pynchon and got like interested in the idea of a cyberpunk future, and then also like concepts like entropy that are big in Pynchon as well.
Right. But yeah.
It's not like he was behind the curve culturally at that point. I mean, 1989 it's not a time when that was fully explored in pop culture. It was still kind of fertile ground, I think.
Yeah, no, this is like very on the cutting edge, I think, in 1989.
Yeah. I mean, Blade Runner is 82, and there's plenty of stuff that's kind of, that's just the beginning of, I think, that aesthetic becoming fully popularized and digested by culture at large. And what hadn't been done perhaps is testing out how that works in the form of a Warren Zevon album. And we had to find out.
We sure did. Yeah, I yearn for someone, even if it's like a complete just fall on your face disaster, which Transverse City was kind of greeted as at the time, although I think it was reviewed well, just commercially.
Critically, not so bad. Yeah.
Yeah, critically, it came off okay, but commercially, it was just an absolute bomb. You know, you just kind of yearn for someone to be taking a big swing like this, whether or not, you know, it's going to end up working out. But yeah, I mean, I guess the album itself, like, people don't even make albums anymore, right? So if albums don't really even exist, then the concept album, like, that's no hope for that to come out.
Well, people do make albums still. I mean, there's just not as many. And I think that the ones that do come out that have a fully cohesive, when we're talking about that, I mean, albums as, yeah, like what we were talking about, fully sort of cohesive statement event records, where there's some notable examples that of people who still attempt to make that happen every time. There's not that many, but
few and far between.
It's also the case that Warren Zevon wasn't one of those people up until this.
Well, no, but he was making that's what I'm saying, is he was always making records, right? He was making albums, you know, the collection of the songs that kind of fit together. Like, Excitable Boy is not a concept album, right?
Right.
It is absolutely a collection. You know, it's a cohesive package. And then, like, so if that's kind of your base level, then you can evolve or graduate, you know, or devolve, depending on how you look at it, into something like this. I what I'm saying is, like, the conditions don't really even exist anymore for this type of product effort to make it out into the culture at large.
Yeah, so in the future tense is kind of overrepresented in concept records. And I feel like, I don't know, that the, like, he writes this thing, like, you know, only like a decade into, not even really, into personal computing and the sort of technological revolution that changes our lives, and there's a lot to imagine and to forecast into the future. And then I feel like from our vantage point in 2024, It's like it is extremely different. There's a lot more computing power, and like also it's certainly not Transverse City, right? And
Right.
it's like there's like the future is like extremely less we I think we must now recognize that like future shock and all these ideas from like the early days of computing are not exactly coming to us or coming for us in that form, you
Yeah,
know?
not at all. It's
Like things
the
are pretty
future.
stagnant actually, weirdly.
Exactly. Yeah, the future's way less interesting, I think, to us now in 2024 than this, whatever this future was that he was envisioning, even if it is
No
this, you
war
know.
in Paraguay. There was no war in, you know, so there was
Exactly.
he was wrong about that. No wars in Latin America, period. Like, you know, so like there's, you know.
Well, yes and no. I think I sort of agree with that, but I actually feel like listening to this record lately, having, you know, heard it in the past and not really like spent that much time thinking about it and preparing for this discussion, I feel like I was more inclined to be generous and also to be like, yeah, he was right about a lot of stuff, and he was right to be worried about the things he was worried about. And I think it's really easy to look at this stuff, this kind of alarmist, imaginative speculation about technology in the future as like it always seems hopelessly almost cringy from the perspective of the present. But why is the question I'm struggling with sometimes. It's like, because if I actually think about it, there's no real reason. It's just like, I think there's maybe some ingrained defensiveness by us now when we are confronted with this stuff. It's like, well, it's not exactly like that. But of course he couldn't know that. There's a quote that I think about a lot in regard to this by William Gibson, where he said, "The future is already here. It's just not evenly distributed,"
Right.
which
Sure.
is, I think, what is the key to giving a record like this as fair a shake as we can. It's like, yeah, there aren't like Mylar buildings, and we're not like cloning ourselves so we can shop while we sit in traffic, but there's things that are spiritually as bad going on. Yeah.
I totally agree. I find it very resonant to listen to, you know, and also like all of his concerns about like, you know, concerns about ecological disaster. And I mean, even just his fixation on chemicals, which isn't just on this record, but also like, I mean, look, considering how he died, like it's
Sure.
very interesting. And but I mean, I just mean that like, I think if I were to forecast from 2024, two decades into the future, I would imagine like more phone. You know what I mean? Like it's just kind of
Yeah.
like things have stabilized to the degree where like it's like there's more shit being routed through your phone. People kind of do less. And so I'm not imagining the sort of the I keep going back to the future shock idea, but like I'm not imagining the sort of like enormous disruptions to the built environment that people were and like in like everyday rhythms of life that people were imagining back then when it still seemed
Absolutely.
like a lot could happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, this is like the vision of the world that he presents here, whether or not it's wholly accurate, and I think he actually is like pretty on the money as far as a,
Yeah.
you know, a rock concept album from 1989 could go. It's like kind of cool and exciting and interesting, and you know, forecasting, you know, something 35 years in the future from now or whatever, which I guess would have been the equivalent from 89 to 2024. It's like, yeah, you're right. It's like it's more the goggles, it's more the headsets, it's more DoorDash, and it's, you know, it's like this element of like, you know, there's almost like a sexiness, I think, to Transverse City, something alluring to it, the same thing that you see in something like Blade Runner or Neuromancer. It's like that's just it's gone. That seems totally drained from any sort of vision of the future that we have at this point.
He gives us too much credit, arguably.
Who?
On this record, I think he kind
Warren
of
does.
gives things he thinks it's not different. Like the way things are is more different than he actually expected, but in different ways.
In different way, yeah. More different in some ways and then less different in other ways, but not necessarily the ways that he anticipated. We've been dancing around it long enough. Let's dive in.
Told my little Pollyanna, there's a place for you and me. We'll go down to Transverse City. Life is cheap and death is free.
condensation silos, all night trauma stands, Pollyanna, take my hand. I mean, kick-ass way to start the record. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah.
Why does it sound Chinese?
It's okay.
Is
that the descriptor?
It sounds like, you know, somebody's like sort of goofy broad idea of like Asian music, like classical, like the way that do you know what I mean? I mean, there's no other way for me to say it. It just like
kind of,
it's kind of
like guitar, like the you're talking about the guitars and everything.
Yeah, the guitar lines,
the chiming thing at the beginning,
the arpeggiated, whatever those keys are. Like if you slowed it down, it would sound like, you know, a movie in the 50s when it's supposed to be like the exotic Orient, but it's like sped up and made all glossy and weird.
I feel like China's, you know, maybe he was onto something.
Well, I think that maybe there is something there of just trying to making it sound exotic. And I mean, I mentioned Blade Runner offhand. I wasn't thinking much about it, but it is also valuable to, I think, reckon how that might fit into this as a text, because it's also Los Angeles.
Right.
And that's, you know, as far as like the depiction of a dystopic future Los Angeles, that was kind of the gold standard. And in that depiction, it is very Asian coded.
Right.
Like everything is kind of, it looks sort of like Tokyo or Beijing or something.
Right. And this, I mean, you know, the rise of, I mean, Japan probably looms larger in like the 80s man's mind.
Definitely.
Than does China. But that depiction of, I mean, it is, the Blade Runner is a good call here, because I feel like, how do you imagine Los Angeles becoming like that in the future? Like there's a lot of stuff happening between present day and like what year is it in Blade Runner? The idea that it becomes built up smokestack, smoky, like tons of industry, like they were forecasting all the wrong things. And that kind of, that again is present in this record. What was happening at the time was like, we were tearing up our industrial base and financializing and technologizing and whatever. And like, that's what's actually happening. And he hits on the financial stuff and the tech stuff a lot, but he's still imagining this kind of like poisoned, industrialized environment. That's like, that is actually what we got rid of, that with technology and capital, you know. Right. I mean, so there's like, I do find that kind of interesting. Like you have the condensation silos, maybe, I guess that's a water thing, but there's the sort of the poisoned atmosphere is everywhere in this, record and, or at least in the concept songs. I just think that's interesting. It reminds me of the Blade Runner thing as well.
Yeah, no, that's a great point.
That was hard to see that was going to happen from the point of view of the 80s.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It's, I mean, in like the, in reality, we ended up getting like, you know, Sweet Greens and like Equinoxes and stuff in Transverse City. But here in this, at this moment in time, it's envisioning, this, you know, almost like third worldist, like, you know, deconstruction of the urban environment that is absolutely happening all over the planet, but certainly not in Los Angeles, for instance, right?
Segregated from the actual city center.
Right.
It is still there, but I think that's why it works thematically. Is it's worthwhile as an image. I mean, it just works for the themes to envision that it is all taking place right next to each other, because it might as well be, is the actual truth of things, is that it doesn't really matter that it's not. And in fact, I've never felt more these days like things are kind of just all so connected. Like the awareness of the awful things that happen so that I can go to Costco is very clear in my mind these days. And I kind of can't help but feel like this song is very good at describing that feeling and portraying it as a literal closeness of a completely commingled space.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's it on the very, on the, like, if you think of 1984 and Brave New World as like two poles of like a way of imagining the future, it's much more Brave New World, really. It's like where there's, you know, it's like kind of a in addition to being weird and ugly, there's this like kind of sense of like hedonism that like runs through it, and that like is connected to the sort of nonstop violence, it seems, that that goes down in Transverse City.
Yeah, you do what you can to keep it bearable, but it's not the environment that changes. It's you that has to just kind of keep your levels in check so that you can stand it. And it's not like too overwhelming, but it's never getting nicer. It's just, it's up to you to figure out ways to cope with it.
Some beautiful images from Warren on this song. Also, the test tube mating cycle, the carbon latest carbon cycle, and my favorite. This is a topic that really he really was grinding his gears at this moment in time. Shopping and shopping malls. Here's the clergy of the mall.
This is where like it's really hard to like I gotta like keep my eyes from rolling. But
that's brilliant. I love that. Like we need some like old fashioned like Gen X kind of anger at
late
just
George
like
Carlin
consumerism. Yes, exactly.
Like late George Carlin stand up special core.
We need that energy back in our culture today.
Only a nation of unenlightened half wits could have taken this beautiful place and turned it into what it is today, a shopping mall, a big fucking shopping mall. You know that. That's all you got. That's all you've got here, folks. Mile after mile of mall after mall. Many, many malls. Major malls and mini malls. They put the mini malls in between the major malls. And in between the mini malls, they put the mini marts. And in between the mini marts, you got the car lots, gas stations, muffler shops, laundromats, cheap hotels, fast food joints, strip clubs, and dirty bookstores. America the Beautiful. One big transcontinental commercial cesspool. And how do the people feel about all this? How do the people feel about living in a coast-to-coast shopping mall? Well, they think it's just fucking dandy.
I guess so. Were you into that, either of you, like watching like the like late period George Carlin specials? Like,
no, I never got into Carlin.
Yeah, I think anytime that I've seen like late Carlin stuff like that, I find it interesting but not like funny or good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's like this, but if it wasn't a song.
This is good though.
Yes, one's good. And this is the one with Jerry Garcia on it, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. There's two with Jerry. Yeah, Jerry's on this one, and he's on, I think, he's on They Move the Moon, I think, a little bit later. But yeah, he's soloing on this one. Warren's got a whole like, you know, murderer's row of people on this record. He's got Mike Campbell from the Heartbreakers and Ben Montench, a couple other people too. But yeah, Jerry, you know, Bay Area legend, coming in off the top rope on the first song. It sounds great.
Who's playing drums?
A computer.
Yeah, I thought so.
No, and that's Richie Hayward.
Well, but is there just some straight drum machine on this record? Because it sort of feels like it sometimes.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I forgot Neil shows up on this record too. This is a very Neil Neil energy on this record.
Does the name of the place do anything for you? I think I skipped it so many times thinking it was Traverse City. Of course, the Michigan getaway.
That's what you get mostly when you Google Transverse City. Like half of the results on the first page are just like, welcome to Traverse City, Michigan.
Yeah. Which is supposed to be really nice. It's one of those places in the Midwest that Midwesterners are like, did you know? You know, we have stuff like this. But I don't know. Transverse is so, I don't know. I don't know what he was going for.
Transverse means.
Webster's defines.
Being across, acting, lying, or being set crossways to the body, across. Transverse is, it's typically, I think, an anatomical context that it shows up. Transverse plane is a horizontal plane perpendicular to both the sagittal and coronal planes. So
enlightening.
Sideways city.
Sideways,
which, you know,
that would have been a cool name for it.
I think it is the name for it. It's just that he picked a different synonym.
Well, he's clearly at certain points on this record talking about Los Angeles. Like he's talking about like this, or like, somewhere in California. He references the CHP on Gridlock later on. And I mean, he's
the river.
Quintessential Los Angeles artist,
urban
obviously.
Sprawl.
Yeah. So like it seems very clear that he's talking about Los Angeles here. And I guess if you look at it, you know, from a certain angle, like Los Angeles, what does it do? It sprawls, it spreads out, it stretches, it's transverse across the Southern California basin or whatever. You know, I don't know. I kind of wish that he was a little bit more specific about like where exactly he was envisioning this, but I guess you need a kind of a, you know, evocative title like this to sell the concept, or to fail to sell the concept, as it were.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the best title for this.
Well, I mean, to be fair,
but he loves LA. But he loves LA. I mean, that's the. I mean, I guess it is love hate, but it, like he really is. He makes LA seem cooler than a lot of people who try to make LA seem cool.
It's
true. That's like I think of like Meet Me in LA is like the only song that's ever made me like wish I lived in LA. And like there's so many off that first record that make it sound fantastic.
Yeah, Desperados Under the Eaves.
Yeah. But this is just so. I mean, I really was imagining something purely sci-fi and Deltron 3030-ish here, but I guess you're right. I mean, this is, we're shopping, we're doing violence. The dancing quanta as well that appear in the first track.
Yes.
Data, and we'll have to get to networking, but the man was,
user-friendly.
That's the most halfway to Weird Al. I always think of him as like halfway to Weird Al. And that's like, and this, you would think that there would be, I mean, whatever, I can save it for when we go through that record, but that's like, he barely stayed on this line of just writing a fucking absolute joke Weird Al record.
He's leaning a little too far in that direction for comfort, perhaps.
Yeah.
Run Straight Down.
I went walking in the wasted city, started thinking about
fantastic.
Best song on the record.
What a song. Yeah.
I think that this is the most effect. Like when I was listening to this, having not heard it for a while, I was totally enraptured by the time I got to after Transverse City. Listening to Run Straight Down, I was like, whoa. Like this
really
is actually,
feels like Transverse City, the song.
Yeah. Totally.
And it feels like weirdly how I've felt. In the not so recent past,
you've been sucking on a lot of these carcinogens.
Well, just the thing of I think a long time I didn't understand what the title meant, and now I do.
Another future dystopia. This one really called to mind for me was the one in Mike Judge's Idiocracy. Is the sort of like. You know, you're just like, you're in this absolute hellhole. Now, granted, he's not as stupid as the blood, whatever, the Dax Shepard character in it. But he's like, you just go home and watch TV.
Yeah.
And all of this shit is happening. The world is completely collapsed. But that is always there for you. And you can explain. Now, what feels more contemporary and less like Idiocracy, of course, is that, this man is not an idiot. And he's troubled by it all. But all he can do is just like tune in every night. And then, the chanting of the carcinogens is pretty. That could be corny, but I think they pull it off.
Totally comes off.
Yeah.
He's doing this kind of ominous, very impressive, I have to say, rhythmic chanting that sort of forms the backdrop of the song, which starts. The song begins with. Like the corniest, like Bill Nye the Science Guy, zapping noise.
That's cool, actually.
Sure, yeah. I mean, it's absolutely the time to use such a thing.
Yes,
this is it. You know, like that. There's so many times in records where there's goofy affectations like that, and like I think I read in the Christgau review of this that like props to Warren Zevon for waiting until. The moment called for it to use these types of sounds and flourishes.
Just waiting for the exact right moment. That is, I do want to register, that's J.D. Souther on the backing vocals here. It's not actually Warren himself.
Oh.
Although it sounds like him. I thought it was for the longest time also until I actually looked at the credits, because I'm trying to be not as
good
ignorant
job.
As usual. Also, all of the chemicals and stuff are actual real carcinogens, yeah. Apparently. I was looking at the Genius page for this thing. Basically,
I'm looking at it right now.
There's like no annotations on this entire record except for each and every one of these individual fucking chemicals where someone goes through and says like, yeah, that's Agent Orange. This is some sort of like pesticide that gives you cancer. This is coming from car exhaust fumes. It's like deeply researched for each and every one of these wacko compounds.
Well, wouldn't it be great if every song just was like that for Genius? Like you could literally look up the objectively true and correct definition of what this means.
One each word meant, yeah.
And that way it would always be right. It would just be like, well, this is just look it up.
That's right.
That's what the song means.
They whoever was doing this annotation tapped out pretty early though, after three lines into the first verse.
I guess that's true. Yeah, but are they
chloride?
Yeah, no, there's more later on. Yeah, well, yeah. I guess maybe that's anyone
wait,
out
no,
there.
No, maybe they repeat or do they?
Some of them repeat, but I think there's other ones that don't repeat. So, any chemistry majors out there? You got some homework to do, nerds. It's a pretty badass song. Feels very
Gastric.
Like yeah, feels pretty hard and heavy and atmospheric. I think. In a way that a lot of the rest of the record maybe doesn't quite so much. But at the same time, like, I think you got to dole this feeling and this sound out judiciously, because too much of this might be... I think there is definitely a risk of coming off just fucking corny, even at this moment in time, you know, regardless of how corny or not it might appear with 4 years of hindsight. You gotta know when you're still just like writing rock songs, I think.
Yeah, and there's a real nice touch of like a sort of imagined nostalgia for the present from that future.
Mm.
That,
oh
that,
yeah,
like, I find very affecting. And the it's worse when I try to remember what
yeah.
I think of now. And that kind of, I feel like that idea that comes up, that feeling comes up really effectively again on They Move the Moon.
Mm.
I do feel like there's a he's like, he is mourning for a world he knows is like being destroyed before him. And I find that actually like, it's like for a guy who's such a like just a consistent ironist,
right?
You know, like it's actually to see that kind of like, and always, of course, that's like kind of the magic of Zevon, is how he can be an ironist and yet be really affecting a lot of the time. And like, this is, I feel like that move is the one that like I found most affecting on this record. It's like that. Because you feel that. I feel that a lot when I think about how, whatever, I mean, the planet will be different 10 years from now and worse. Like that, you feel that every day in some form. And this song really captures both the hopelessness and the sorrow.
Yeah. I really feel the same way. That line actually kind of got me. I was, that refrain of, and it's worse when I try to remember. And then, the watching TV, which at the first time he mentions it at the very beginning, it sounds a little bit trite or like flippant. But I think that actually the watching TV in this song is about needing something to be a medium between you and just what's actually going on. Like he says, I'd rather watch it on the news at 11. Like there has to be something that kind of mills it and processes it for him to feel like he can't to be protected from just directly facing what's going on. And I can see it with my eyes closed, I think, is a really heavy and affecting bit of lyricism. I think that kind of sums up the record, and it has that feeling of yearning, which is really interesting to see from him. Like, sometimes it takes a weird or a really extreme set of circumstances, in this case, this whole setup, to access the earnest and vulnerable side of a certain creative talents. And I think that this is kind of an excuse or a way for him to get there while feeling like he's kind of safe.
Yeah, he can still be laconic Warren Zevon, right? But at the same time, kind of like smuggle this more kind of humanistic, environmentally conscious, romantic, exactly, message into his music.
Imagine something that's worse than the present so that he doesn't feel like a pussy complaining about what's going wrong.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and there's I feel like this song also contains a nearly direct reference to Blade Runner, to the androids. The animals, all the animals being gone except the robots, which I feel like that's, I don't know. I mean, there's different ways of interpreting that, and I guess that book isn't the only one that came up with the idea of there being no wildlife in the future. Sure. But I do, that is a prominent part of it, and and in the movie as well, the sort of robotic animals and the prized real animals that still exist, or whatever I'm not remembering it right now, but except for the robots and the dynamo, which I found that really slips into kind of goofy songwriting, but
the dynamo. Huge song, badass song.
Incredible song.
Long arm of the law.
It's the law. It's the law. It's the law. It's the law. It's the arm of the law.
This, at this point, like, this is basically just a Warren Zevon song with like a reference to 1999 from 1989. Like, that's about the extent of the theme that you're getting in this one, which is great. You know, it's great to hear, you know, a classic Warren Zevon song that he's kind of wedging awkwardly into this theme at this moment in time, because it's still, you know, it's great to hear him talking about wars in Paraguay and the long, strong arm of the law.
Yeah, it's really like a solid B Warren Zevon effort with, again, I do feel like he's nearly given up on the concept at this point.
Yes.
the concept exists to get you run straight down. And then he's like, yeah, maybe a war in South America.
Yeah, why not? Exactly. Yeah.
Well, what's the difference between a war there and a war anywhere else?
We've talked before, like Warren has spoken himself about how his songwriting process is usually just like he thinks of a title, like a cool ass title, and then works backwards from there. Mm-hmm. So like when we talked about Mutineer, there's this wacko song called Something Bad Happened to a Clown. It's just like, I don't even know how to describe it, but like that's where he starts, just with that kind of title, and then backfills there. The long arm of the law feels like a primo example of that Warren Zevon approach to songwriting. He's just like, yeah, that's kind of a badass Warren Zevon phrase. Now let's figure out how to turn this into a 3.5-minute song that fits on this record.
Pretty easy, it seems, for him this time around.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of this song is him just saying, it's the long arm, it's the strong arm, it's the long arm.
I mean, it's true, though. I mean, what he's saying is true.
It is the long arm of the law. It is the strong arm of the law. A great first verse also. I mean, when I was young, times were hard. When I got older, it was worse. First words I ever heard, nobody move, nobody get hurt. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. This also, I got to say, reminds me of another record from around the same time. New York.
I was going to say New York. Absolutely. Absolutely some like Good Evening, Mr. Walhun another bullshit on this record.
1989 album.
Something was in the water, man.
Yeah, pesticides.
Yeah. that's the energy I'm talking about. Like the energy of just being of like living, existing in this sick, diseased culture that's just like, you know, run by fools and idiots and fuck ups who want nothing but the worst for you. And like, we take that for granted. Of course, that's the world that we live in. But just like that righteous anger that like like Straw Man, right, from New York. It's like, I need some of that in my life, brother.
Well, yeah, I think that is one of the things that's really different from it's what's actually correct about this record is that like the characters in this album, especially in the second half, it's like, well, maybe I'm just thinking of one song, but like
there's a couple.
There's a bit of just blind lemming like acceptance of the circumstances. And this is, you know, the act of protesting the slide into that mode, which today, like, yeah, the things that we're arguing about are things that we've already lost. Like, right. we're already fucked. Like, we're like, oh, don't get rid of this streaming app thing about like where people post little short videos that's undemocratic when it's like there's plenty that's already gone wrong by this point that he was trying to articulate, like, we shouldn't even get there.
Right. Yeah. It's so far gone.
Yeah. We're well past it. I'm talking about like down in the mall and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah. I thought that's where you were going.
That's where I was going. To get to that one.
Well, before we get there, I think that's about enough for Long Arm of the Law. Banger, as far as I'm concerned, one of my favorites on this record, and a song that's, you know, yeah, maybe a little close to home, considering this yeah. weekend's geopolitics. Turmoil Back in Moscow brought this turbulence down on me.
Turmoil back in Moscow brought this turbulence down on me.
Man, this one's badass.
But we've like fully exited the, I mean, this is like he leaves the marker of the 1999 war in Paraguay.
Yes.
And we move into this one and Perestroika is on the table.
We're just
and
back in 1989.
We're back in 89. Yeah. Warren Zevon's imagining some geopolitics stuff in his kind of in his way. And yeah, what? This is a guy fighting in Afghanistan. So we're even further back in time, really.
Yes and no. We weren't in Afghanistan that long ago.
Well, yeah. I mean, this was, you know, the Russian invasion of Afghanistan that had, I forget if they were, I think they were probably out of there by 89, right? My knowledge.
So, but now now we should check some dates.
Yeah. You know, someone out there, you know, look it up for us. We're not here to know things. Yeah, I mean, it's very, this is very this seems like it should belong on the Envoy. Like,
all right, so I knew 79, they didn't pull out till 89. I'm sorry.
89, okay,
they
all
didn't
right.
pull out till 89. I thought they were out of it.
So it was probably, they were probably still in there, you know, yeah. as of the writing yeah. of this song, at least.
And this guy just wants to get back to Vladivostok.
Just wants to get back to Vladivostok, man, yeah. it's just a, like kind of a stupid, you know, fun rock song, I think, that bats above its average or like punches above its weight just based on some of the cultural references that he's dropping.
Yeah.
But that's okay. That like in this context, I think that's perfect. And like I was saying earlier, like this song is infectious musically. I think this is like probably the funnest song to listen to on the record.
I'm okay on it. I'm kind of cold on it. I don't know.
Lukewarm on it. All
it's
right.
It's whatever. Yeah. I know you man. Like this
it's
one.
Kind of fine. Like,
come on. When that funky bass line comes in at the end.
Turmoil back in Moscow.
And then he's doing the verse in the Russian. Oh, man, this but one is
that,
just
he
so
is
much
Russian.
Fun.
He's got that in his family.
In
that,
his blood. That's right. Yeah, right. Very powerful.
His father was Russian.
Russian. Yeah, he's got. I forget. There's Russian heritage. He's half Mormon, half Jew. Just a very heady brew. Very, very powerful stock that went into the making of this man.
But he doesn't have any, like, I feel like this song for a Warren Zevon, like, geopolitical grand chess game song of the sort that he occasionally likes to do. I feel like there's not much to it. It's like, Moscow sends a guy to fight in Afghanistan, and that sucks.
Yeah.
There's sort of, you know, that's kind of it. I guess we have the translation of the Russian that we can check out.
There's not much there.
It's about the same stuff, you know?
Another village in Red Sand Desert, the silence of the enemy from every side, and I wanted to see mom so much. Woo. Turbulence down on me. Yeah, you know. Yeah, I mean, it's not Veracruz or The Envoy itself, you know, the song.
Or The Envoy, yeah, or Roll, or whatever. Like, there's, you know, he's done better work on this front. I feel like that's my feeling on this song. There's kind of one note, in a way.
That's fair.
You know. It's good though. It's catchy. It's like it's a catchy rock and roll song.
Yeah, I think it serves the purpose that it needs to, for me at least, because like there are moments on this record where it like that are very affecting. I think, you know, the first two songs, Transverse City and Run Straight Down, are back to back really powerful way to start the record off. But like I find myself like starting to drift, I think, just as like a listening experience, like, you know, songs that I want to put on and listen to in my headphones, you know, at certain points. And Turbulence is that moment where I'm just like, I'm snapping my fingers, man, regardless of how incisive the geopolitical commentary might be.
And thank God we're out of Transverse City, too, because that was getting, it was, you know, it was too much.
Bad vibes, man. This episode of Jokerman Podcast is presented by DistroKid. Over a million artists rely on DistroKid to distribute their music and get it into all of the places it needs to go. Your Spotify's, your Apple Music's, your YouTube's, your TikTok's, your Tidal's, your Instagram's, and any other streaming service of note. DistroKid makes music distribution fun and easy, with unlimited uploads and artists keeping 100%, that's right, 100, all of them, folks, of their royalties and earnings. DistroKid comes with tons of great features, including Mixia, which allows DistroKid users to put the finishing touches on their tracks in just minutes, getting a customizable and polished end result that anyone can feel confident in before sharing it with the world. The DistroKid app is available now on iOS and Android. So go to the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store to download it today. They moved the moon.
Okay, so this one is a lot like another song that we talked about recently on Kamakiriad.
Are you talking about Countermoon?
Countermoon. I mean, how many songs are there that are by prominent rock and roll artists in the 80s where the condition of the moon is in the future time doing the opposite of what it is supposed to do in a romantic capacity?
Well,
that's what we've got here.
I don't really know what's going on this one besides him just being kind of, I feel like we're back in Transverse City at this point, right?
I guess so. Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. Or at least, I mean, like, I sort of, it's like, this is an interesting one. I love this one. I think it's great. But like the metaphor, well, it's like there's ways of looking at it. Like there's like the sci-fi, like, did they move the moon? But the moon, when you look down, the moon and the stars move. I mean, that's literally how this works.
Right.
No, there's like,
yeah,
there's
orbits.
This is just him describing the world turning. Yes. And like someone moving on from him and him losing step with things. And I feel like that's what I like about this is it taps back into that sort of that imagined future nostalgia thing from Run Straight Down of like, you know, I don't know. I feel like I relate to the feeling that he's talking about. I know this is kind of a breakup song, so like I'm bringing something to it of just like the basic feeling of they went and just fucked everything up and made everything worse.
Mm.
Know how? And if you try to describe it, you sound crazy. But it is like it is. Everything's. Remember the Naomi Klein posted. Naomi Wolf.
Mm. Naomi Wolf. Yes.
So Naomi Wolf.
Oh yeah, she's good. I like her.
She's good. She was tweeting about how like the clouds look different now, and like they like she's become a bit of a conspiracy style person, and she was talking about how the clouds and everything looks wrong now, and how everyone seems like sucked of life because of the COVID vaccines, and she always posting this stuff, and you can tell that she just feels like stuff's wrong. She's sad about it. She feels like things are different, have changed, have become different to her and alien to her. You almost feel like it's like an Oliver Sacks situation.
Mm.
And she just confabulates some explanation for why. And it's like, it's the vaccine, it's, you know, chemtrails and all this other stuff. And I feel like, I think of when Naomi Wolf says stuff like that, I don't agree with her, but I do see like, I'm sort of, you know, like, I feel like I know that feeling that she's trying to, that she's dealing with.
There's like a spiritual truth to it, even if like the facts are completely wrong on their face.
And I don't even think clouds look different now or people act differently now, but I do feel like that basic sense that like something vital has been sucked from something or something's changed.
Something's wrong. Yeah. We took
the
wrong path.
Never going back to the way it was. That like that feeling is, I feel like that seems resonant now. And I find the song pretty affecting for that reason.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I see that.
It's literally about the time, passage of time, you know, because that is what astrologically they do move the moon and change the stars around.
I've heard that the moon is leaving us by like a fraction of a centimeter every year.
Is that true?
Like a millimeter every year. Yeah. Like it
goes further away from
the Earth? Further away. Yeah. Wow. Like in millions of years, it will actually be just kind of a, like, it'll look like a star. It won't, and it'll just kind of be there. Distant.
Not my problem.
Yeah, not my problem.
That's what I'm saying. But in this song, what this song presupposes is, what if it was?
Well, it would be a bummer. It's a very affecting song. I think he strikes a nice balance here where it's like, it's got, you know, some of that Transverse City sauce, you know, yeah. the drippy, gooey, viscous future shock feeling to it, but it's also, you know, kind of standing on a pretty strong, emotionally resonant metaphor and series of verses.
Yeah. I know. I really like this one. And he doesn't often play the sort of like almost like 80s synth pop kind of, I don't even know what to compare it to.
Yeah, but not at all.
Unusual sound for him too. And I guess you're saying Jerry Garcia is on this one too?
I think so. He's on another song. He's on, yeah, They Move the Moon. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's that like kind of whining guitar solo that comes in towards the end.
Gotta be honest, this song is a snooze, but that doesn't mean that I disagree with anything we've said about it. I do think it's a good, I like it, but like it's a damn, you have to be like at least as a quarter depressed as he is on this song to feel like it's full of effect.
It's still kind of winter in New York City, so this one's been hitting me.
It's very doom feeling. I think it's a very strong, and that's even the first side, you know, Turbulence into They Move the Moon. I think that's a very strong, tight package there to kick the record off first half. And then we flip it to another banger. I think maybe my favorite song on the record and one of his all-time great just lyrics, I think, but maybe not.
One of his all-time great lyrics.
Lock the gates, Goofy, take my hand.
Exactly.
Iconic. Splendid Isolation.
Splendid Isolation. I don't need no one. Splendid Isolation.
I kind of feel like he throws in the towel on this one. This is the thing, is it's incredible, and then he goes and Transverse Cities it right at the end.
Yeah.
Like it becomes like there's a punchline to it that then kind of like pulls the rug out from the whole song. You know what I mean? Which I do love this song. It's a great song. But the last verse is the, you know, it's like, it seems like another great Warren Zevon record about how he can't hold down a relationship. And then there's this kind of gag at the end.
The tinfoil on the windows verse. Yeah.
Which, by the way, when I was in San Francisco most recently, I actually drove by a house that actually had tinfoil on it.
Really?
Yeah, like a bottom of Eureka by Market, kind of 17th, where 17th.
Isn't that where you used to live?
That is literally where I used to live. Yeah, wow.
So, yeah, between 17th and Market, I think on Eureka.
Yeah.
In my recollection, that was where it was. And I was like, holy shit. There's still some freaks and weirdos in this town.
I gotta keep an eye out next time I'm over
you
there.
You mean smart people who are protected from the rays?
Protecting themselves from 5G, and they're reading their Naomi Wolf, and they're staying up. But yeah, I do feel like his ironness, his jokey instincts led him astray. I feel like he undercuts the whole song.
Interesting. I never thought about it like that. I see what you mean. It's because the first couple of verses are so powerful. I think that first verse, I want to live alone in the desert. I want to be like George O'Keefe. I want to live on the Upper East Side, never go down in the street. The whole Michael Jackson verse is just...
Okay, can we just
beautiful.
Say the whole Michael Jackson... The whole Michael
away,
Jackson verse.
Michael Jackson in Disneyland. Don't have to share it with nobody else. Lock the gates, Goofy, take my hand. Splendid Isolation.
This has got to be one of the most iconic. It's one of the craziest lyrics. Lead Goofy, lead me through
Lock
the world
the
of
gates,
self.
Goofy, take my hand. Oh man, that's where else are you gonna get that from?
Nowhere else.
Here's another thing he forecasts is the Disney adult. The Disney adult.
Wow. World.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, it's true.
You know, narcissistic, weird culture that may produce them. I didn't know this about, someone was explaining this to me, Disney bounding. Are you aware of Disney bounding?
Oh, I do know. But
bounding, no.
My friends and I, we have watched, there was one Disney vlogger.
Oh, yeah, you're talking to the right guy here.
Michael Kay, who we watched for years, and now he doesn't do it anymore. Like,
he stopped doing the Disneyland stuff?
He got married to like a domineering woman who I guess made him stop. But
wow.
It's horrible. I mean, like the way that it ended was just, this was a whole saga. And like it ended with people just being like, I wish you would just make the videos you used to make. But he made the fatal mistake of moving to Orlando. And it's like what used to be these videos of a guy who loved to take the do the Hajj and go Disney World became like he's too close and the magic was like
I can't shit where you
in
eat.
The water
smoking the whole carton
Disney bounding you can explain it to Ian.
As I understand it, there are regulations, I think, for like obvious reasons. You can't go to Disneyland or World or any property Europe dressed like the characters, because obviously they're paying people to dress like the characters.
Okay
to behave a certain way. But you can, so Disney bounders, Disney adults who want to like experience the magic of like being like a character will like dress in ways that like walk right up to the line that Disney has set as they understand it.
Ooh.
And then is this right? This is
they wear like, you know, if you
and they're in
to be,
they're in the Disney parks doing this.
Yeah. It's like you go there sort of like in the color coded, like according to whatever character you want to emulate and suggest. You can't actually wear a costume as an adult. If you're a child, it doesn't matter. But if you want to be Buzz Lightyear, you're just a man wearing, you know, your purple bow tie, your white shirt, and your green suspenders.
Right. And you're trying to like trick kids into thinking
Not about tricking kids. It's about tricking yourself.
Okay. This sounds like a child molestation scheme for a second.
No, it's not that. It's just
these
like,
people are normal and cool and regular. They're not weird.
These people are children. So it's, there's a whole article that came out about how this was all part of the plan, that like Disney was at every turn encouraging this behavior, which makes perfect sense. Like sort of these people sucking forever at the teat of Mickey.
So the sanction against dressing like Goofy is the thing that makes it so enticing, you know.
Forbidden fruit.
Yeah, the entire phenomena of the Disney adult as we understand it, this thing of like you don't ever grow out of it, and it's kind of like Vegas in a way. Like they do enough things that make it enticing for an adult, but they package it in this sort of innocuous thing.
Maybe, you know, that's when they get them as kids, kind of like Big Tobacco.
Yeah, exactly.
Look into a big sort of a big, you know, the DOJ could get on the case and
I do think that this song though it's less about that than it is about something more broad and actually like more true, is kind of just this feels like it's about COVID in a way to me.
Yeah, this feels absolutely because, like searingly 2024.
Yeah, like there is a real thing where people who were on the edge and maybe didn't know it of straight up agoraphobia, they are not back, and they're not coming back after that period of time. Like that's a real thing.
Well, and it's even less about like not going out of your house and more just like being on the phone all the time, like being on the computer. I don't want to wake up with nobody beside me. Don't want to take up with nobody new. Don't want nobody coming by without calling first. Don't want nothing to do with you. Just like all human connection just like severed, just mediated contact only just through the screens.
And having an excuse to do it too is just sort of like there's a reason why. And so the tinfoil, as ludicrous as that sounds, I mean, is it that much crazier than people who are still doing jogs with double masks on?
Well, that's the thing, is like it comes off as this like total like whacked out freak agoraphobe when he's writing about them in this song. But like you could cut that verse and like be describing what, like 35% of Zoomers or something in the song with the remaining lyrics.
Well, what's interesting, now that we're entering like day 8 of the Twitter DoorDash discourse. What is interesting about it? So on the one hand, there are people who like say they have like health reasons for not going outside and so on. And
yeah, then
there's the other sort of vector, which is like people who feel like there's like kind of a like leftist angle to this whole thing.
The woman who said it was like it's communist to order DoorDash because everyone's tired at the end of the day.
Was that what it was about? I thought that
it's about you know, I don't know. I've been pissed off about Seamless and stuff for a decade at least, and long before COVID, because of it's like obvious. Like the thing is, if you would go out to a diner in New York City or go to a diner in Ridgewood on Myrtle Avenue, and they were just like slammed with fucking even just phone orders. And it's like you're getting omelets delivered to your house.
That's grotesque.
It put pants on and just walk down the block. Like that, it's just crazy. And then you
don't
know,
put pants on and walk to your fucking fridge making an omelet.
That's ableist. That's ableist, Evan.
Yeah. Right. Not everybody can crack an egg into a pan.
But yeah, that's true. Okay, you've sold me a little bit on the tinfoil thing. I'm coming around. I mean, I love the song. The first two verses are fucking perfect. They're unbelievable.
It's a brilliant song. Beautiful song. That harp. Oh,
the rest of this and the next song, they really have nothing that feels like specific to a futuristic album by Warren Zevon. It just feels like so vintage Warren.
Classic Warren. And Splendid Isolation, to his credit or to this song's credit, goes on to become like a really, you know, major, like that's the main song that kind of had a second life on this record.
Yeah.
Or beyond this record. There's a great solo acoustic version from the Learning to Flinch set that came out, what, 91, 93, something like that, a couple years after this, where it's just Warren accompanying himself. And it's like, it's fantastic also. It's a beautiful song, Splendid Isolation. Networking. I'm user friendly.
That's the Weird Al record. This is where he really goes for it.
Yeah.
Networking. I'm user friendly. Networking. I install with ease. Data process. Truly basic. I will upload you. You can download me.
Networking. I install with ease.
It's that horn. It's the horn. That is what does it for me on this. Like if there's actually an acoustic version of the song tacked onto the end of the Spotify version of this record for anyone who's listening to that.
Yep.
That like it is still networking. It still has these, you know, goofo lyrics, but that big brassy horn and the Benmont Tench organ, that's just like so like Chuck E. Cheese fucking family band sounding. It's man, what a song.
Yeah.
There's a great lyric on this, which I only caught today. There's a long, hard road and a full, hard drive.
That's right.
Yeah. You know what's interesting? The thing that struck me about networking and the various sort of like personal tech references he makes is they actually like, you can still catch most of them. Nothing like, you know, this is MS-DOS age stuff.
Yeah.
But like, you know, networking, install with ease. Like hard drive bits and bytes.
I think Basic is kind of the most outmoded one that he,
Yes, and even if I'm looking at Ungenius, they haven't capitalized it. That has evaded the eyes of the geniuses.
Truly Basic?
Yeah, the
coding language, Basic.
Language, yeah.
I see. He seems to think that you're still doing lunch while you're networking, which is not really the case these days as much. He actually underestimates how much can be done virtually.
Well, this is before you were doing it virtually. You couldn't do your networking virtually. This is kind of like the reverse metaphor.
Right. Right. I mean, he's kind of playing with it, right? Cause he's networking and networking, but like it's not really clear where you're supposed to be on either front, like which one's the metaphor and which one's not. But I it's sort of I'm kind of impressed with some of the lyrics. I mean, like long hard road and a full hard drive is like, that's good. There's some good ones. He manages it's aged, the references have aged decently, I guess, but it's pretty corny. Deliver me from the bypass mode.
Deliver me from the bypass mode. I'll upload you. You can download me.
Yeah.
This is the one, I think, of all Barry the songs Dilbert. On this record. Barry Dilbert, exactly.
Yeah. It's, like a Dilbert mouse pad.
Dilbert core music.
Scott wow. Adams loves this one.
Scott Adams. What a journey he's been on.
I made a playlist like a year ago, at least, called Analog Man, where I collected as many songs as I possibly could that were like this. And I did include this song on there.
Trans.
It's got Political World. It's got the songs from The Gold Experience by Prince. It's got My Red Joystick. It's got This Is the New Shit from The Matrix Reloaded by Marilyn Manson. It's got Satellite Walk. It's got Transformer Man. It's got Computer Love by Kraftwerk.
Does Van have any sort of computer 1980s type song?
Why Are You on Facebook?
Oh, well, that's... How could I forget?
It's got Hacker by
30 years later.
It's got Q Synthesizer by Destroyer. There's a lot, and this one fits absolutely into that canon.
Oh, yeah. Networking. I'm user friendly. Networking. I install with ease. We're hitting a bit of a shaggy period on this record, I got to confess, to me at least. And this is something that I think I intuit on many Zevon records. Like, you get like 2/3 of the way through and it's just like really strong, like fantastic, you know, song after song after song, all great stuff. And then when you get to this like track 7, 8, 9 range, you emerge into some choppy waters. And I think that's where we're at this point, from Networking into Gridlock.
Gridlock up ahead, there's a line of cars as far as I can see. Gridlock going nowhere. Roll down the window, let me scream.
Yes. Which is like the song that this immediately called to mind for me is that one Offspring song that's on Smash about traffic.
Hey man, you know.
The Road Rage song. And of course, like, I feel like, I mean, the thing that's interesting to me here is this, like, this is like the great reactionary subject of like this time period.
Yes.
Like, even like up, like Falling Down.
Falling
Down.
This is such a Falling Down ass song. Exactly.
It is.
Yeah. The Offspring song. And then like, I'm trying to think of what else. Even up through like Office Space a little bit, right? This sort of daily grind of traffic, and I guess I don't know what about it like codes this way that it for some reason has a little bit of like just a misanthropic cast that I'm reading as reactionary. Certainly with the Offspring, like if you go back, and not to make this about the Offspring,
please, but do.
Going back to like listen to Offspring records, like as I did this not too long ago, and I was like, what the fuck. These the politics of Orange County punk are like fucking insane. And then of course, like there's I mean, there's even worse examples. I'm blanking on the band, but like really way more openly right-wing punk out of Orange County.
Sure.
And anyway, I don't know why this song reminded me of all of that, but it just did. And I feel like it's I guess Falling Down and the misanthropic feeling and the sense. The inability to reckon with the fact that you are the traffic as well.
Yeah. Right. Like that you live in a society.
This basic misunderstanding.
And yet you participate in it.
Well, there's this, you know, I think that the subject of traffic, right? Like, it typically goes along with obviously big, you know, freeway systems, highway systems that are, you know, go hand in hand with like suburbanized, you know, atomized single family home type living. Yeah. Right. And so, the people that live in those types of homes and environments who are most likely to encounter traffic, right, and get pit are the people who are commuting either way out from the exurbs into the city or reverse. And so it kind of like there's a self-selecting element to it, right? Where like the kind of people who are most likely to encounter this subject are also the people who are most likely to be reactionary and pissy and bitchy about it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And I guess that's Warren at this moment in time.
Well, it's a song about being upset that you're in traffic. It's not really inappropriate that it's tedious and repetitive and not that inspiring.
Not something you want to listen to most often.
Probably one of his worst songs. But, you know, it's thematically resonant that it is that way.
Yeah. He mentions the RTD. That's what they used to call the metro down there, the Rapid Transit District.
Oh, okay. I was wondering what that was. Familiar with, you know, LA urbanism and that sort of stuff. I didn't know that.
You're talking to a guy that has spent way more time reading and thinking about that shit than he ever should have. Okay, so here we go. Now we're going from damn, doesn't the traffic suck? To damn, doesn't the mall suck?
There's a brand new shopping center, 7 stories high. There's bound to be a sale or two. There's something we can buy. There's 4 floors of parking, and we're sure to find a space. We'll spend all the money that the government doesn't take. Going down in the mall.
Well, the mall rules.
No, it doesn't rule. Sure does.
It's hard to say. It's you can kind of go back and forth on this one, right? Like whether he's being sarcastic or whether he's sort of has a perverse love for it.
This feels like a character. I mean, Zevon obviously writes about characters. This feels like a classic Zevon oaf character that he's giving voice to here, but with a bit of a silver tongue, you could say.
This is just, you know, Mad Magazine fold out stuff. Like this whole record has some of that quality. And it's something I've noticed actually coming up more often in certain artistic objects lately. Like, I don't know if you saw Bo is Afraid, but
not yet.
That movie feels 100% like the feeling of one of the Mad Magazine, like tableau fold outs of just grotesque characters like eating each other and falling off a roller coaster and like a nuclear explosion in the background and dinosaurs in the foreground. There's like a quality of this that's just this sort of this mural of grotesque stupidity that I think this song in particular is very much all in on. Like the thing of just, it's a credit to it that it's so stupid that like you can't see the edges. He really commits. Like it is widescreen IMAX, just half-wit shit.
Yeah, he's like he really is not even trying on some of these verses.
Well, yeah, buy some of this for buy some of that.
Exactly.
It's pretty bad. But I mean, then again, you think about it. The concept is gone. The concept record's so long gone. It's so far in the rear view. But it is interesting to think like forward in time about the shopping mall and like how we think about it. His children, because they're all like kind of gone or dying, they like miss this. They don't have Zoomers and whatever, whoever's behind them, are like nostalgic for this thing that we all considered like the absolute pits. You know,
where you just go and hang out and like, you know, get cups of water from the Sbarro and like smoke cigarettes.
Yeah, that like the whole like the sort of peak era of malls, which is like a grotesque thing to have lived through, I guess. I mean, but we all kind of missed it, I think. But it's like this, we don't even have this anymore because of like one website, which is pretty funny. And you actually do like, obviously he can't see as so blinded as he is by the like disgusting consumerist side of it, that he is socializing and participating in public life in some form.
It's true.
Which is, I don't know, you know, just sad and not what he was going for, but it is sort of depressing.
Well, that's what he says. It's something we can stand.
It's something we can stand. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've always had a warm, you know, warm spot in my heart for the mall as a person who worked in a mall. I worked at an Apple store in Sherman Oaks for several years.
Wow.
Yeah.
At the Galleria.
That's right. The Bloomingdale's Mall. Wow. Not the Galleria. No. The Westfield Fashion Square.
Oh, Fashion Square.
Yeah. You know, it's a beautiful tableau, beautiful tapestry of humanity there, especially, you know, in the valley in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
It's not a bad place, the mall. And I mean, some of the other malls, the Beverly Center, the Grove, the Americana, it's the Glendale Galleria. It's like, you know, I guess I'm just revealing myself as a valley boy.
The Stonestown is still kicking.
I mean, Stonestown's still going. Yeah. Although it feels a little kind of.
A little empty.
It's got a little, yeah, kind of a whiff of vacancy to it. That big like movie theater complex that they got there is all right, but you know the stores seem to be moving down market, and then the fucking downtown center is like that's a crypt at this point.
I was there not so long ago, and it was before the big tenants moved out. It was okay. It didn't seem I don't know, but yeah, now I guess it's just they're just shuttering.
It's pretty brutal. Yeah, I was there last week, and I had to get some soap from Aesop. That's where the Aesop is in San Francisco. I have to, nah, you know, whatever. But yeah, the whole Nordstrom thing, you know, is just like, there's like just gates up. And so it's like five stories of just like hurtling escalators and just completely like vacant, silent, dark department, like deserted department store. It's a very bleak feel.
When he wrote this song, though, that was like unimaginable. I think this song is quaint now because it comes from a time when the most obvious thing that would happen was not only would this continue apace, but it would just become the only thing that there is.
Yeah, exactly. He starts right off. There's a brand new shopping center, seven stories high. There's bound to be a sale or two. There's something we can buy. This is the glory day. This is like the Beverly Center in like peak kind of condition. Feels very quaint.
What he's actually talking about, like in terms of the nature of what he is worried about here, it's worse and more metastasized than he could have possibly imagined, in that we just are all online shopping at all times.
Now, you never leave the mall because you can buy any bullshit you want at the drop of a hat, and yet you get none of the positive benefits of like being in a like just a physical space with other people around
with other
you.
People no it's
all
actually
the bad shit, none of the good shit.
It's not it's just isolated, and Amazon is just this kind of ubiquitous presence that has a stake in every part of life. Life is the mall, and you don't even notice. You don't go to a place.
Well, we've made it through, I think, the choppy part of this record. And yeah, the Transverse City concept has been completely discarded, left in the dust. Was it even here to begin with at this point? We're going to wrap up with Nobody's in Love This Year.
So good.
Great song.
In a way. Also, there's like a repeating thing in it that I find kind of like, wow, that's not, that's the you went with like the first draft. I don't want to be Mr. Vulnerable.
No.
Damn, you couldn't have thought of a different way to say that. It's just kind of like, wow.
I like it.
This sounds like a love ballad. It sounds like, you know, there's like CDs they would sell on TV, like love ballad compilations.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
It has that stench to it to me. I mean, it's well written, but I can't, it's not the sort of Zevon song I get into. I like something a little bit more up-tempo, I guess.
That's
and
fair.
A little, you know, but, you know, the financial metaphor in here is interesting. It makes me think of the way we are dating these days, I guess. And like, you know, again, like with the sort of his like he was right about some things here, and I feel like this like sort of inability to connect feels like super contemporary when you think
I think that the song is overall really strong, and that I really like the line, nobody's in love this year, not even you and I.
Yeah,
like, which is, yeah, I mean, it hits. It's like you would think that there's some kind of caveat, some gap in everything he's laid down at this point. And the gap comes in the form of his admitted disappointment at the way things are. And that he's addressing And letting himself actually be vulnerable on a song when he says, I don't want to be vulnerable, mm-hmm. which I think is a fitting way to close the record. And it feels like it closes kind of abruptly, but I do like that it ends on this one.
That's the way that all Zevon records kind of close, though. I feel like they all kind of just like end and like, yep, that's it. Like time for the credits type of thing. I'm thinking like, you know, the end of Sentimental Hygiene, for instance, right? Which is, what's the last song on Sentimental Hygiene? It's fucking Leave My Monkey Alone.
Yeah.
Or, you know,
self-titled ends on, you know,
on Desperados. Yeah, self-titled is like that's its own whole,
it's in its own category. Yeah,
exactly, thing from beginning to end. But the records that come after are just like there's almost a perfunctory element to the way that they conclude, I think,
except for the last couple records, which I mean, sure, that comes back into focus, which
right,
which were the records I heard first. I have to say those records, the final ones. Life Will Kill You was the record as a youth I spent most time with, which is odd. And I guess it kind of
why it explains why you're doing this here today.
Yeah. But, you know, that ends with Don't Let Us Get Sick, which is like, as you know, heavy a closer as you can get. So that he still had that going on later. But
yeah. And I'm not even talking exclusively just about like the last song on the record. Like really, I mean, Transverse City, after we get through Splendid Isolation, it's really just kind of a long, slow drift into the last song, I think, which is a nice way to end it. But the whole second side of the record kind of doesn't. He should have done the Transverse City shit more.
Yeah, there could have been one more song that I think.
Talk about laser beams and spaceships or something. Come on.
Like, what's love like in Transverse City? We have
having sex with an android.
Yeah, you know, there's like there's the robots. There's a lot of things to explore here. And he only explores love and even shopping in the present day. What's traffic like in Transverse City?
Yeah.
Well, that's gridlock. That's.
But no, that's LA. It's just very clear. I mean, I guess Transverse City is LA, but I don't know. That feels like it's a factory. Once again, he doesn't see what's happening with all these new technologies and all this financialization.
Got to go to the factory to stamp out the computer chip.
Yeah. Well, in that way, I mean,
Simpson.
This is something we alluded to at the very beginning, but I do think that that's maybe something that you could argue is a strength of the record, even when it seems like a weakness, is that while it kind of has the feeling like halfway through it gives up on this concept, on the other hand, it does what it promises with the first track, which is that it's about living your life. It's about what doesn't change in the future. And that the first song just kind of shows what is different, and everything else is about, it's there. I mean, it's less in the foreground about what is different. It's more about the things that are the same, like, you know, as time goes by, it does have that quality. And by the end, I really love that it ends on this note, because it brings it back to something that you get at the earliest parts of the record with Run Straight Down and They Move the Moon, about this feeling of the romantic being usurped or kind of undercut by the way things are. And I think that he shows at this end point that is the core of the record, because you do have a through line of that. And Splendid Isolation following They Moved the Moon, it makes a lot of sense now that I think about how that is the natural reaction to that disillusion. It's just, I give up. And I like that the final note is like, I don't want to give up.
Yeah. I mean, he's warns a tender heart. We know, you know, he's
behind all that.
Yeah. And, you know, he wouldn't, if you actually don't care, right? If you don't give a shit, if you truly are just laconic and that's it, like, you're not making a record like this in the first place. Like, you're not going to care enough to comment on the fact that, like, the past as seen from the future is this, you know, idyllic or more idyllic period of time before the environment was poisoned and there were no more animals, right? So the fact alone that he's like commenting on that, even with the kind of sharp tongue and at a remove and through this screen of sci-fi concept or whatever, like the fact alone that he's doing that betrays that he cares, you know, and has feels invested in it, and you know, kind of has a human core beneath it all. And so I think kind of doing away with all of that shit here at the end, and just, you know, really kind of being pretty straightforward, pretty straight and narrow with this anti-love song, I think is a strong way to square the circle.
George Carlin quote, inside every single person, there's a disappointed idealist.
There you go. That's Warren Zevon.
That's
possible
him.
That's not actually something he said.
Yeah, that's definitely
just
not.
An algorithm, which is perfectly fitting for this moment.
For this episode.
Yeah.
Algorithmic Carlin performs every night.
Oh, boy.
As we're seeing.
Yeah.
Algorithmic Carlin.
Well, the time has come. Everyone's favorite moment on Jokerman Podcast. Willie, I don't know if you're aware, but we rate all of our subjects on a 1 to 3 star scale.
Oh, no.
You can either give it 1 star or 2 stars or three stars. One is the worst, although 0 is really the worst, but probably you don't need to give it 0, but you can if you want. 3 is the best. There are no half stars. It's 1, mm-hmm. 2, or 3.
That said, 1 out of 3, pretty good still.
1 out of 3 is still pretty good. It's still 1 star, like 1 Michelin star.
I'll give it 2. I mean, right. Like, they run straight down and they move the moon and then Splendid Isolation. These are all great. I feel like it was, you know, it seems like it was misunderstood at the time. The themes have proven to be resonant. He was prophetic even in some of the things that he would face in his life. I don't know. I find it surprisingly moving through all the cutting through the, like, except for, you know, the bad songs we went through. I feel like there's a strong half of the record here that would merit 2 stars, especially in a guy whose catalog is as sort of choppy as his.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. This has some real strengths. I'm going 2.
Beautiful. Yeah, this is 2 for me too. It's not a perfect record by any means, and you know, you're gonna hit the skids now and then, but the highs, I mean, extraordinarily high, and it feels like a big swing from him, which is something that he didn't really do so much, certainly by this point in time, like Sentimental Hygiene and Transverse City. After this, it's like really kind of like meager returns, and a lot of beautiful records and fantastic music and stuff, but he feels like he's just playing on a smaller stage in a smaller ballpark at this point, you know, after this moment in his career. So it's great to see him for one last moment, kind of not on top of the culture by any means, but you know, with a big picture widescreen type of vision.
2 stars for me as well, for that same reason. And yeah, this is a record where he wasn't actually, it's his most idealistic record, because to make this big of a swing is a really faith-based thing to do as an artist. Like, it's a really big risk, and he was punished for it. And we got to respect that. That's what our program is all about. I do think that to look at a record like this with some eye toward the context from which it emerged and the ideas and the feelings that gave birth to it in it within that artist, it's pretty hard not to see this as a really, in a way, like a tender hearted effort.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us, Willie.
Thanks for having me.
People online follow you on x.com, everyone's favorite website, x.com.
Find me on x.com.
Yeah. x.com, baby.
In the spirit of this episode, we're not calling it anything else.
It's x.com. That's x.com. What it is. We yeah. live in Transverse City, and we go to x.com.
Past the shiny Marlar Towers, on the way to x.com.
Up above in Transverse City, every weekend lasts 4 months. Here's the hum of desperation. Here's the test tube mating call. Here's the latest carbon cycle. Here's the clergy of the mall. Here's the witness and the victim. Here's the relatives' remains.